This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
I think we'll go straight into the markets in terms of what's expected this week. A lot of financial institutions, particularly banks, have been releasing their full year results. And for me, among all this, what really stood out for me as we start the discussion is on, I want us to discuss on a stock that I think is going to be a hot one this week. Mm-hmm. And the stock is Housing Finance.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, as you've seen, Britam announced that they want to sell part of that stake to a local bank that has the muscle to increase that mortgage pie. Looking at Hisahap as we speak right now, Housing Finance has gone up by nearly 10%, 9.94%.
Yes, it's interesting.
This takes me to another. I tried to compare this to what happened to NMG when they announced the share buyback.
Yeah.
For the next 2 weeks, that share price skyrocketed by nearly 25%. No, more than 50% actually, around 60%.
Yeah.
Once this announcement was made, Housing Finance have gone up pre-market, 30 minutes after markets opened, it's up by 9.94%. David, what should we expect, man?
Hey, you know, I actually find that interesting. Well, okay, so to give some background, around 2014, first of all, Equity sold its 24.76% stake in Housing Finance to Britam. That stake was worth 2.4 billion. And then now 3 years later in 2017, NSSF sold its entire stake in Housing Finance. So it seemed as if people were just trying to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And so now in 2020, another 3 years later, Britam now wants to sell its stake, part of its stake, not, they haven't said in its entirety, such that they might be able to focus on the core business for Britam. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually expected the share price to go down because mm-hmm. it seems almost like there's a loss of confidence in the company. However, it's going up, it may show that since Britam wants to give it to a bank, to a big lender who can inject the necessary capital, that in the long term, especially or possibly if that bank is Equity, if Equity wants to expand its mortgage arm through Housing Finance, Housing Finance could really recover in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but we're yet to see who it sells this particular stake to, mm-hmm. if it actually manages. Yeah, but it's unfortunate for Britam because what year was that? When they initially bought their stake was worth, what was it, 2.4 billion, thereabout.
And you remember, I think, particularly during the 2014-2015 bull run, Housing Finance was one of the hottest stocks in the market, man.
Yeah, it was doing really well. But now their stake is now, at current share price, their stake is now roughly 600 million. Yeah. So they've lost over 75% of value. That's a real significant hit, which is unfortunate. But, you know, these things happen.
Could you compare this to what happened to GameStop?
GameStop.
Like they are devaluing the shares and they really go up after a while. I'm sure, I'm just asking.
Interesting. Well, my thinking is
the market manipulation.
Not really. I think the question is is Britam going to put more shares into the market for the retail market? Generally, the acquisition strategies. Is it, I'm assuming, are they going to put more shares in the market in addition to getting, let's say, a bank on board?
Okay, so most likely it will be a direct transaction.
Mm-hmm.
But as per the article I've read, there's also likely to be some say by retail investors.
Yes.
To what extent we do not know because the details of the transaction aren't yet clear.
Okay.
In a sense, and as per Leah's question, Leah asked if it has some similarities to GameStop. Not really, because you know this is not a short squeeze of any kind. It's just a transaction. People are buying into the, you know, buy what is it? Buy the news, sell the rumor.
Yes.
Buy the rumor, sell the news. one of those.
Yes.
Yeah. So in the short term, I'd see the sharp. Okay. As we're seeing, the share price is likely to continue going up, but until the actualities or the real details of this transaction play out, We don't know the long-term prospects of the company. We don't know if it will recover. We don't know what's going to happen going forward. So right now, genuinely, I'd say if you're buying into housing finance, it's buying into speculation to a large extent.
Interesting. I think maybe one of the reasons could be that given that they haven't disclosed the price at which they're buying the stock, I'm assuming probably, are they going to go with market price, open market price? Do they have like a determined price? So I think given that the details aren't clear, that's why we might see the share price going up. Speaking of Britam and its investments, Britam has a new CEO, a guy who previously used to be the CEO of Old Mutual. I think his reputation with regards to management is I think he's been good. Even his performance at Old Mutual was an excellent one.
Yeah.
So I think when Tom announced that Wairegi will be exiting and this new guy will be coming on board, it's called Mats or something. Yeah, very hard name. One of the things that we've seen over the last few weeks is some more of a restructuring, which includes they let go of some employees, they restructure the entire operations from asset management to general investments, and another thing that which we've just spoken about is he wants to cut some of those assets that he thinks are
those unprofitable divisions, investments that are not making sense.
Yes.
There was a lot of job cuts. Of
yeah, actually. Yeah, there were top management and there also
He's cutting off the fat to help the company run easily. Yeah.
What do you think of this guy's strategy and the company going forward?
Well, it seems good. He seems like a visionary and, you know, having a good track record with regard to Old Mutual, it shows that what he's doing, he essentially knows what he's doing. And going forward, there could be long-term recovery with regard to Britam. In fact, doing way better than it has been doing in the past. It's a good thing that they're actually cutting aside those things that are not necessary. You know, of course, this is unsustainable. You can't keep on cutting at the expenses per se, you need to kind of grow. But I think he's doing this cutting with regard to these unprofitable divisions, etc., such that they can focus on the core metrics of the business, insurance, and to become an even larger insurance provider within Kenya and possibly expand even more outside. So having a good management team or a good manager is a really good sign for a business. Okay. Like, you may not have even seen the profits per se of the business, but you see the long-term potential, and that is evident in a lot of companies. I mean, you can think of like Berkshire Hathaway, you know, that good management, many tech companies. And so seeing his management strategy, it actually gives me hope in Britam that the company will do well over time to actualize his vision. And we'll continue seeing that over time, what his vision actually is, what he aims to do for the company and the like.
Interesting. Speaking on strategies of companies, an interesting thing that came out over the last few days was that Kenya's government had withdrawn a bill to nationalize Kenya Airways.
Yeah.
This comes at a time when Kenya Airways is expected to release their results this week. I think that should be the full year results covering the period between 1st of January to 31st December.
Yeah,
2020, and I think during the half year, the loss went down to I think about 21.7 billion.
Hey,
guys, what's your expectation? Leah, what do you expect about Kenya Airways going forward? General overview, is it a good company to invest in? Is the government doing a good thing to put down this bill of nationalization?
Okay, what I think about Kenya Airways is Kenya Airways has really been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic because of the travel bans, the restrictions, and honestly, right now we are facing a third wave. We're not really sure whether we'll be able to control it, or countries might go into lockdown again, or we don't know what will happen. We're just hopeful for the best and prepared for the worst. But what I think is, for right now, Kenya Airways is, on my part, it's not really a good company to invest in it. Not sure about, there's a lot of uncertainty holding the COVID-19 pandemic, holding investors. We don't know what will happen. Like,
will they start getting the this thing that people are supposed to get, the COVID, after you get a vaccine, you're supposed to get something so you can travel.
Oh yeah, those COVID what?
A passport.
Travel passport.
Yeah, but will they get it? What will happen to Kenya Airways? Like, what's going to happen? On my part, I don't really think so, but
A number of years, and in fact, it's been struggling in light of poor management. Now, the idea to nationalize it, honestly, to me, does not feel like a good idea, because what the bill is actually proposing is that they want Kenya Airways to merge with Kenya Airports Authority and also the Aviation Investment Company, and they want to create a new company that's called Kenya Aviation Corporation. It's a holding company of sorts. And so it's like they're merging a really good entity, which is KAA, which actually announced profits of 2.5 billion. And they're merging it with an entity like KQ, which has serious managerial problems, a lot of corruption, a lot of issues that have plagued the company for a number of years. So this merger, this nationalization of sorts to create the new entity, it seems like KQ is going to drag KAA down with it, unfortunately, to be honest, from all that I'm viewing. And actually, the reason why there's been a lot of complaints from a lot of associations who are looking at this deal and saying that this would be a new way to plunder money, to siphon money out, you know, because now the problems in KQ are still there. It's not that they've changed. All you're doing is that you're nationalizing it. In fact, you're making it a bigger entity, and the assets of KAA are over a trillion, you know, as in that, if you don't have a good strategy going forward, if you don't have good management and the like, things will just get much, much worse for KQ and now for KAA as one entity. And also, you know, there could be breaches with regard to what's it called, interests and the like. So I hope it doesn't go through. Apparently it's been delayed for the next, it might be delayed depending on how Tuesday goes, for the next 6 months, that's bill, because the MPs haven't received their money. So in their minds, they're like, how can you give this entity money without giving constituencies money, in a sense? So even them, the priorities are interesting, you know. It's unfortunate, but it's interesting to observe.
Interesting. Yeah. I think it's also good to note to our listeners that Kenya Airways was suspended from trading at the NSE. So even if you check out the share price, it's been constant. I think when it was suspended, it was trading at, just checking my HISA app to see at what was the time. Can't remember, but it was meaningless. I think some people benefited on that more of that speculation mode. There was some sort of volatility in there before the government announced this nationalization strategy, and then eventually the NSE suspended the share price.
Yeah, how would you have performed if you held KQ from, is it, what were the highs? Was it in the hundreds?
Yes, I think there was a time it hit over 100. And during the listing, I think, you know, there's a time Kenya Airways was one of the best performing share price. It made the NSE share price, NSE 20 share index go up to, I think, one of the all-time highs of more than 4,000, if I remember. It was listed, I think, around 1996, if I'm not wrong. And at the time it went up, it was performing very well. I think, where did the rent start beating these guys?
Hey, when they started that project Mawingu thing, it was 2 grand.
Okay.
Grand. The share price erosion or shareholder erosion there is really unfortunate.
Yeah. I think that's why it's usually advisable, if you're investing in the stock market, try diversify your options. So don't put all your money in one stock, and don't be emotionally attached to each any company.
Yeah, and also pay keen attention to management, what they say. If they're avoiding your questions during the AGM, that's really a red flag, in a sense. Okay. Oh, but Felix is also mentioning that KQ did a share price consolidation in 2018, so also that may have brought it down significantly.
Okay, interesting. One more last thing on local markets before we jump into what's happening across the continent and across the globe. I thought it's good to speak about the local retail industry.
Yeah.
So for the last some years back, our local retail industry was dominated by local homegrown companies. So that was Nakumat, Tuskies, and Uchumi. But I don't know what happened.
it's the usual case of management. Hey.
I don't know what happened, but then what we saw is that some of these leading retail chains collapsed at the height of when they were supposed to actually to give value to share, at least the, some of these companies. I don't know what happened to them. They collapsed, then came in. Now foreign companies began taking over the market. An interesting report that we saw last week was that Carrefour is now the third largest retail chain in Kenya. They've actually hit sales of over 20. Is it how much?
It's okay. So the 2020 sales went up by 30.2% to 25.3 billion. That's a lot.
And they've been in the market for less than 3 years.
No, they've been four. Because they opened their first store in 2016.
May.
Yeah, so then now they have 11 outlets in Kenya, and then they just opened their second one in Uganda.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a very good company. And then it's internationally known.
Where did the local retail chains mess up?
But actually, it's not only local. If you look at ShopRite, ShopRite was unable to get into the Kenyan market well. But in Africa, ShopRite is the biggest supermarket in Africa. But there's something about Carrefour, and it's actually, in my opinion, it's cheaper than most supermarkets in Kenya. It's actually cheap.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, because they get, what is it? They pay suppliers very fast. So suppliers give them huge discounts when they buy on wholesale. So, you know, that tends to be a huge issue with many of our, what's it called?
Local retailers.
People can be taking months to pay you back. You're supposed to pay immediately. Carrefour does it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, a large part of why these local companies failed, first of all, Nakumat does managerial and, you know, corruption therein, theft. What is it? Tuskies. Was it Tuskies that went down?
Yeah,
that one was just unfortunate.
No, so, it was actually about the soul. You know, what I think about Tuskies was that you get that thing of being the sole owner of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And now there was like when the inheritance part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I got from that is that maybe we are brothers and sisters here. And maybe you guys, then maybe you guys, when the person was starting Tuskies, you did some capital injection in it, And maybe I was still in school. So it is out of circumstance that I could not put any money in it, But when it comes to sharing, I want an equal part as you. So it brought about a lot of and it has brought down very many businesses.
Actually, you know, Naivas would have gone the same route. It's only that and Naivas and Tuskies started at the same time. They're actually together.
Actually, they have a common
related.
The guys who started related. Then now Naivas got private equity money. And then now they diversified the board such that it's not family run and owned.
Yeah.
They brought strategic people, people who know the industry well. If you know, when a company gets big, you need to sort of divest your ownership from it. You need to kind of push away. You need to be, you know, involve people who, in a sense, know what they're doing, especially in a family kind of enterprise. So that one really brought them down. And then there are cases such that, okay, you see, it's a family business, isn't it? So now someone is, imagine this, your own company. You're a supplier to your own company. And then now you're supplying at a premium. So, for example, the cost of Siju tomatoes is 5 shillings, you supply it at 20, and then no one bats an eye. You know, such things like internal corruption within the company. It's just so unfortunate.
Very sad. Very sad. Interesting. Personally, I think what made Carrefour stand out is I think they have a strategy with regards to how they manage their surplus. One of the key issues that was there with the previous, or that made some of these likes of Nakumat taxes go down. So in terms of how these people manage their suppliers is that I'm assuming you supply Carrefour. So usually what they do is that they have a model whereby a supplier payment agreement is maintained with a credit period ranging from 7 days for grocery suppliers to 90 days for electronics and slow moving products. So, and one of the things they've done is they source directly
from
the wholesaler,
from the suppliers.
Yeah.
So unlike, I'm assuming unlike the likes of Tusky, someone could go to China, buy a lot of things, add up their markup,
yeah,
supply to the supermarket.
Yeah, and they go directly.
Carrefour goes directly, which I think is a good strategy. Yeah. And if they have the cash to pay the suppliers, then I think...
Yeah, it's even an incentive to suppliers, yes, to supply.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because in the retail industry, if your suppliers are not happy, then you're dead.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Interesting. I think that's it for the local market. Maybe we can touch on commodities. So usually on the commodities bit, in terms of the tea auction, I think someone asked a question on how that happens. So every week, the prices usually, just a minute, someone has asked, I'd be more interested in looking at Quickmart. They look like a well-structured retail chain with great potential.
Yeah, and also,
what do you say?
There's a question on Quickmart.
Okay. The question on Quickmart in terms of, I'd be more interested in looking at Quickmart. Interesting. Quickmart received some funding, right?
Yes. When private equity money comes in, you know, yeah, it's a solid business because mm-hmm. private equity guys really evaluate a company well. And mm-hmm. so the prospects seem good. I like how it looks. Maybe it's not as cheap as Carrefour per se, mm-hmm. but it seems like a good business. And future prospects look bright. I'm not sure how many stores they have, or
around 30. I checked out last week. Ah. They have around 36 stores.
Oh,
okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting. There's someone who commented that we are looking at the same trend. Mm-hmm. We hope not, but mm-hmm. with also like the way Kenyan supermarkets, they really expand.
Mm-hmm.
They expand, then after a while they just start closing down. Yeah, so we really hope that will not be the case for Quickmart, because as you said, it's really expensive. Even if there's a time the owner said, I'm not sure, but I know he said that it's not a spam, it's a convenience store. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's that thing about a convenience store is more expensive than a supermarket because mm-hmm. it's like for the convenience purpose. So uh-huh. that's why they are really spreading into estates and yeah. less into like towns or malls, mm-hmm. because they really want to, if you're going to be a convenience store, you mm-hmm. have, you can push that expense because there's that.
Oh, it's like yeah. you're paying a premium for convenience.
Yeah, it's actually, there's a, it's called what's capital, a consumer is willing to pay versus the market price.
Yeah.
Because you can find that sometimes the market price is lower, but you're willing to pay a higher price to get the good because mm-hmm. of the convenience. And
I think one of the things that local retail chains haven't really implemented or looked at closely is how they can use the online channels to increase their sales.
Yeah.
I think Carrefour is doing that very well.
Yeah.
And I think it's from the conversations that we've had with people in the industry and from the reports that we get from the management is that they upped that more aggressively in 2020 when the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's part of what increased their sales.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, as we look across the continent, the Nigerian Central Bank mm-hmm. came out last week saying they actually didn't ban crypto.
Yeah.
You can use cryptocurrency as you wish. Leah, what do you think?
What I think is, this is like, when they banned cryptos, they were like, we don't want anything to do with them. And they saw mm-hmm. Nigeria is actually said mm-hmm. to be the one with the most people who are trading Bitcoin, mm-hmm. actually in the whole world. Mm-hmm. I saw something like that.
Yeah.
About it. Mm-hmm. So I think after a while, they were like, no, this is going to be a loss on our side. Then last year, NSE was, the Nigeria Stock Exchange was the highest.
Yes. Something. In terms of, it was one of the best performing stock markets.
Yeah, it was one of the best performing stock markets. So I think they really thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so banning cryptos was not a good idea in mm-hmm. the market because people are really interested and it can actually turn out to be a good thing for the country to also bring in more, because the more people they get money from it, the more they will invest, because Nigerians actually invest in their country. They invest in people, the rich people as per se, they really invest even in the projects of the others.
Mm-hmm.
So it really brings up their country well.
So I think they just saw that was not a very good idea for them. So that's why they are denying it now. Even if you would have just said maybe you have reconciled, why would they deny it?
Well, apparently, okay, from the article that I'm seeing, it's saying that the CBN did not place restrictions from the use of cryptocurrencies and we're not discouraging people from trading it. So what we have just done was that we have prohibited transaction on cryptocurrencies in the banking sector because they don't want banks to be at risk of
the volatility, the high volatility.
Yeah, interesting. That's interesting.
So this is how I look at it. It's you banned it, but you're not you don't want to admit openly that we banned crypto. Which takes me to a case back of Kenya. Our central bank issued a warning to banks saying they shouldn't deal in crypto. So locally, if you are a crypto vendor dealer or anything, and then you have a bank holding for you the fiat currency, the bank will actually shut down
your account.
Bank account because there's no the central bank doesn't want them to be associated with the cryptocurrency, especially Bitcoin. I think it's the same case with Nigeria. So in a way, if you ban crypto, the banking industry, how does settlement then happen? So the only way these people are left to do crypto at the moment in Nigeria will be P2P transactions. But then I'm assuming you can't load your wallet, then cash out via bank or anything. And then given that Nigeria, in terms of mobile money, you can't compare that to here locally. So I'll give you a good example. The other way some of these crypto startups could navigate the industry would be you open, let's say, a banking account in Nigeria. Then instead of people loading, now given that the easiest way was you load your Nigerian, say, wallet, then that money goes into your Nigerian account, banking account. That was cut off. Banks actually began communicating to all these crypto startups, and most of them were hit. Some had raised huge chunks of money. But basically, that went up into the air. Then the easiest way would be use payment sort of channels or integrators, so the likes of Flutterwave. But now Flutterwave also, I think, cut a relationship with some of these crypto dealers. So basically, you are left to
It's interesting because you know central banks actually coming up with their own cryptocurrencies now. Okay, they're coming up with regulations and the like. It seems like going forward, a point in time will come whereby you can't regulate, you can't stop the internet. And with the network effect of Bitcoin, the effects are likely to continue far and wide. Of course, I understand the fears that the bankers have because they're fearing that this thing has a lot of volatility, people can really lose their money, etc. And that's why in the background, they're doing central bank-backed cryptocurrencies, which of course would really destroy, illegal or illicit trade because now they can track literally every cent. So that one in the long term, we're yet to see how that goes. But I don't think it's a good idea to ban crypto per se at this point in time. No, let free markets be free markets. What people want to buy, let them buy. Of course, some would argue we don't live in free markets in today's world. But yeah, and that's my opinion.
Interesting. Now I think we can speak briefly about what's happening on Wall Street. You've seen after the stimulus package was signed by Biden, stocks and major indices across Wall Street went up. I think is it that people have so much money on their hands so that they can spread it across? What's happening there, Vistoma? Is it?
Well, we might have a repeat of the same, such as last year, whereby a lot of the money that's being dished out goes towards, what are they called? Goes towards assets. So there could be asset price inflation. However, I am of the opinion, I think I've explained this once before. This thing is likely to end in a few ways. No one really knows. So you just make estimates and then you make investments based on those estimates. So one of the ways where this or how this stimulus package, all of it could end is that a lot of it can go toward asset prices because people don't really have much use for this money. A lot of the families that are receiving these checks, it's like extra income that's just coming in and they're still quote unquote okay. They're not actually that badly off. in a matter of speaking. And so a lot of this money is finding itself into these trading apps like Robinhood and the like, and people are, you know, trying out their luck. Mm-hmm. And it leads to asset price inflation. Add on the bond buying program by the Fed, which is doing what? Reducing interest rates. So interest rates are at all-time lows, so businesses can take loans easily. It's easy to finance yourself and make investments here and there, mm-hmm. which, to summarize it all, because of time, it leads to asset price inflation. Mm-hmm. So that's one end, whereby the stock market just continues rallying as it is, it continues going up. The problem with that is that over a long period of time, we may have a market that doesn't move per se, a market that's just stagnant, if you will. Mm-hmm. That's what happened, or has happened in the past. Like, for example, between 2000 and what? Between 2000 and 2010, The S&P 500 gave a return of roughly 1%, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. And so the reason was, after the crash that happened in around 2000, people were just afraid of these things. Companies had really high valuations, and they didn't, of course, return to these valuations till after a long period of time had passed. Mm-hmm. So what's likely to happen going forward is you might have a market that just, it will either crash or it will just trend sidewards, mm-hmm. for a very long time until those high valuations are justified. Mm-hmm. You get, mm-hmm. you have companies trading at 10 times revenues with zero profits. Yes. Like, that's insanity.
Yeah.
But people are just buying into them because they're like, it's the future, whatever. So if that trend continues, low interest rates and the like, we'll just have a sideways market for a long period of time. Alternatively, the market could crash. Alternatively, the money right now can move towards now goods and services as measured by the consumer price index. So that's how you'd have actual inflation. Like, for example, if a country like Kenya started printing money, the money would go to individuals, yes, and it wouldn't actually reach the banking, okay, it would bypass the banking system quite quickly. Individuals would take that money and start buying goods and services, and the prices of these things would shoot up. In the US, that's not happening per se, because this money is moving towards asset prices. So you have asset price inflation. So you have inflation in the US, but it's not measured by the consumer price index, CPI. That's why it seems like there's no inflation. So an alternative ending is that, since the economy is opening up, this money will go to goods and services. These goods and services, the prices will really spike up. This will force the Fed to raise interest rates. Raising interest rates will raise the cost of capital. The cost of capital being raised will cause the stock market to crash.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so okay, there are different endings
okay.
to this thing. We are not sure how it will end in the long run, but yeah, that's just some of them.
Interesting. Meaning, are you looking at a recovery in the near term, or
a recovery with
the economy, given that the vaccines are being rolled out? I think UK announced that they have about. They have vaccinated about 50% of the population, and that's going on across the globe. Do you think once a major, a big part of the global population is vaccinated, we might see a recovery?
Yeah, the economy will roar back, mm-hmm. to be honest. It will recover really well.
Okay.
That's why people are justifying the high share prices, because they're saying, the share prices are high because people are looking to the future. You know, the stock market tracks the future. People are looking forward, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, now that depends on how you look at it. So we're yet to see the outcome of all these things, but the economy will recover almost immediately. Well, that is the hope, at least that I have.
Okay. Yeah. So which means then what? So you still expect the stock market to crash?
We have no idea how this will end, to be honest.
Okay.
But I have companies that I'm looking at that I'm hoping that the share price comes down a bit, or I'll be watching them with some distance. I'll wait for it to reach a price that I'm comfortable with, and then that's when I'll start buying. Because one of the greatest mistakes that people make is that they pay such a high premium for prices, and then over long periods of time, those things tend to underperform the market. I'll give you an example. If you invested in software in 1971 and paid the high premiums for things at that point in time, or let's just say software in general, the industry went from having 0% market share to 15% market share in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Then now, if you had $1 invested in software, you'd have made $76 till now, mm-hmm. over 40 years. If you'd invested in a quote-unquote dying industry, these old industries that people are just, you know, kind of losing...
Mm-hmm. interest or think are boring, may call them value industries like oil. Mm-hmm. Oil lost its market share from roughly 15% to 3% of the markets in 2019. Mm-hmm. But if you had invested $1 in an oil, something that tracks oil, you'd have had $130 today. Mm-hmm. Yet. Mm-hmm. So what's important is do not pay a premium for stocks or anything.
Okay.
Like it will really hurt you in the long run.
Okay.
It's better to buy a poor performing company, one that is not doing so well at this present time, at a fair price, than it is to buy an amazing company at a high premium, because that poor company will outperform this this company that's trading at a high premium, because people have already accounted for that future growth. So don't be surprised if you see Tesla trading at the same price in 10 years that it's trading at today, because it's trading at roughly, I think, 2 times its revenue.
Yes.
10 years from now, assuming it controls like 50% of the market. That is insanely high. But again, you know, people say it's not like a company, it's a software company. Which is interesting.
Yes.
You know, it's like,
yeah.
if I run a store selling chickens, 99%, then now 1% comes from selling bicycles. Am I a bicycle seller?
Interesting.
Things to ask yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I think there's one analyst who went and I think part of what he said that I think his target price for Tesla, if you remember, I think that was on Bloomberg, was about 3,000.
Yeah.
Hey, man.
Hey, yeah.
Interesting.
That's ARK Invest.
Yes.
Yeah, they're so bullish on that company.
So bullish on that company.
But
in terms of how they view it, look, and personally, they have always viewed Tesla is that, look, yes, in terms of how they have tackled that market. So the way I think most analysts view it, I'm not an analyst, I'm just a market commentator, and I keenly follow the market. So don't take my advice too seriously.
Of course.
So in a way, they see a future whereby Tesla will be able to sell the software service, deploy it as software as a service to other car manufacturers. Right?
Mm.
One of the things they've also done, they have the distribution.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm assuming I'm a which car maker. Let's say I'm GM, for example.
Mm.
I get Tesla software, build my own brick and mortar car, deploy Tesla software in my car or whatever, whatever company that is. Then, because Tesla has built this massive distribution and charging stations, then it's easier for them to use this. That's how I've always viewed it.
But then that makes a lot of sense. You know, if you put it in that way, someone can value it highly.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
If you are, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I think that's how most people see it. So I think that's what they're able to price in that high valuation at this particular moment.
Mm.
But I think it's interesting. So I think to our listeners, we hope one of these fine days will be able to access such opportunities, of course, speculate, trade, invest, or whatever.
Yeah.
But you see, one of the things that global markets offers people is that ability to diversify and invest across multiple sectors.
Yeah.
Unlike our African or frontier markets, whereby locally, we have, let's say, 60 companies, only 5-6 are liquid enough to where you can put in your money. The good thing about global markets is that you can put across different industries. And here at the team at HISA, we are doing our best together with the engineering team, the entire team, everyone. We are working hard to make sure in the next couple of months, or hopefully we are working hard. The thing is that we are working hard to make sure that to give our audience and users ability to take advantage of some of these opportunities.
Yeah.
So I think as we close, maybe Davis, your last remarks on this week, then Leah can give us her last remarks.
Last remarks? I'm not sure what to say. Oh, well, looking forward to, first of all, seeing what the HISA team is doing over the long run, and also looking forward to seeing more banks give their results, because banks have a deadline of, I think, March 31st.
Yeah.
So this week we're expecting a lot of financials to come out. I'm hoping to see how non-performing loans are doing, those ratios, if they're going up. I see them. I forecast them going above 15% for the whole industry, which is daunting, even though there have been a lot of moratoriums and the like. Because I saw KCB's financials, I saw the fact that they restructured a small percentage of their loans,
mm-hmm.
and yet the non-performing loans still went up quite significantly. I'm imagining more banks restructured more, and because the industry restructuring on average was roughly 54%. KCB's as per full year 20 was roughly 19%, which is low. And you still imagine, other banks will announce higher non-performing loans, which can be a pointer that we may not be out of the woods yet, per se. Yeah, but the good thing, banks have extended some grace period to a lot of people over long periods of time, which is really good. You know, they're caring for the people rather than caring about money full force, in a matter of speaking.
Just to add on that, ABSA will be releasing their full year results tomorrow.
Yeah.
I think let's see how that goes.
Yeah. If the South African unit is anything
to peg on,
well, yeah, they should be really bad. Yes, but we will see.
Okay. Interesting. Leah, your closing remarks. Okay.
Okay. Thank you guys for joining us today. Remember, this was not advice to buy or sell a share. It is just our in-house opinions, and yes, find us the same place, same time next week. Thank you for joining in, and we hope you have a good week, everyone, and thank you.
Thank you. Bye.